This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
an American woman who works for an online television station in Zimbabwe has been arrested. Her lawyers say she's accused of undermining the authority of President Robert Mugabe on social media.
That's Sebastian Mumfu reporting from Harare. We'll have full details coming up.
Also, Liberia's Supreme Court says it will rule on Monday on a legal complaint against the country's electoral commission. And South African prosecutors argue today that disgraced Paralympian Oscar Pistorius should serve 9 additional years in prison.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: an American woman who works for an online television station in Zimbabwe has been arrested. Her lawyers say she is accused of undermining the authority of President Robert Mugabe on social media. Sebastian Myofu in Harare has more for VOA News.
The group Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, which is representing Martha O'Donovan, said police made a dawn raid Friday at her Harare home and confiscated some of her electronic devices. Kumbirai Mafunda, the spokesman for the lawyers group, told VOA that O'Donovan's arrest did not come as a surprise.
We have noted a worrying trend in terms of arresting people and charging them with insulting or undermining the authority of the president. So we see this as an intensification of the clampdown on dissent. And just that this is the first Twitter-related arrest coming soon after the establishment of the Ministry of Cybersecurity. We were not really surprised. We know this government to be worried or concerned by free expression, especially as we move towards the 2018 elections.
Last month, President Robert Mugabe's spokesman said his boss had established a Ministry of Cybersecurity Threat Detection and Mitigation, caught to trap all rats, unquote, accused of abuse on social media and the internet. On Friday, U.S. Embassy in Harare spokesman David McGray confirmed the arrest.
U.S. Embassy consular services have been in contact with the American citizen, and we have confirmed that she is being represented by counsel. So obviously, we're concerned and aware of this situation, and we will continue to monitor it closely.
Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights said O'Donovan might appear in court on Saturday. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Liberia's Supreme Court says it will rule on Monday on a legal complaint against the country's electoral commission. The action has led to a suspension of preparations for next Tuesday's presidential runoff until the judges rule on the case. Charles Brumskine, who came in third in last month's election, filed the complaint alleging fraud and irregularities in the October vote. Monique Joan has more from Monrovia.
It's still unknown whether Liberia's presidential runoff will remain as scheduled for Tuesday or be postponed after today's hearing on voting issues in the first round at the Supreme Court. The hearing was held after a losing opposition group, the Liberty Party, filed a complaint to the National Election Commission over allegations of voting irregularities and fraud at polling centers. The Liberty Party later filed a writ of prohibition as a form of legal action. During the hearing, the LP's presidential candidate, Charles Brumskine, argued that the constitutional laws around the timeline of the poll count, as well as the announcement of the first round results and following runoff date, were misinterpreted by the NEC. He also argues that the institution didn't give enough consideration to the timeline allowed for political parties to file complaints about election proceedings after first round votes are announced. The judges pushed back against Brumskine's arguments by pointing out that no representative candidates within the LP simultaneously came forward to contest the results in order to bolster the presidential candidate's dissent. The court also challenged the NEC's handling of the election timeline, Judges expressed concern that the NEC went forward and announced the first round results and runoff date while it was still presiding over an outstanding complaint from the Liberty Party. Judges ordered the NEC to speedily wrap up its case with the Liberty Party in order to help advance the court's decision on whether or not to delay the runoff. Monique John for VOA News from Monrovia.
South African prosecutors argued today that disgraced Paralympian Oscar Pistorius should serve 9 additional years in prison after being convicted of murdering his girlfriend model Reeva Steenkamp. Pistorius was resentenced last year. This after prosecutors successfully argued that his conviction should be upgraded from culpable homicide to murder. After the new conviction, a judge sentenced him to 6 years, below the 15-year minimum recommended under law in South Africa. Today, State Prosecutor Andrea Johnson argued to the Supreme Court of Appeal that the sentence should be increased to 15 years, saying Pistorius has shown little remorse. Pistorius maintains he mistook his girlfriend of 3 months for an intruder and did not mean to kill her when he shot her 4 times at a locked bathroom door. The appeal is another twist in the 4-year-long saga that followed the 2013 shooting. The judges will rule at a later date.
The Central African Economic and Monetary Community reached a key milestone this week. Heads of state meeting in Chad lifted visa requirements for their citizens traveling within the 6-member regional bloc. But challenges remain to ensuring free movement and deepening economic integration. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports for VOA from the Chadian capital N'Djamena and the border town of Garoubole in eastern Cameroon.
The announcement marked the culmination of 23 years of negotiation. Citizens of Cameroon, Equatorial Guinea, Central African Republic, Congo-Brazzaville, Gabon and Chad no longer need visas to travel within the 6-member economic bloc. Chadian President Idriss Déby made the announcement at the CEMAC Heads of State Summit in N'Djamena.
Ils attendent légitimement des actes forts.
Déby says the people have rightfully been waiting for strong actions that concretely demonstrate that the integration of Central Africa is a reality, which is the main reason the Central African Economic and Monetary Community was created. He says everyone who visited Chad this week can testify that they were exempted from visa charges. CEMAC was founded in 1994, but has trailed behind other regional blocs on the continent in lifting visa restrictions. Economist Youssouf Sali is Chad's former prime minister.
Je tiens à féliciter nos chefs d'État. Ils ont décidé de ne plus être.
He says for CEMAC, it is better late than never, but that the effectiveness of the free movement of goods and people will depend on whether there is also an integrated and competitive economy and whether political divides that have hampered economic activity are broken. Last year, the economies of Gabon and Equatorial Guinea took a hit amid the global drop in oil prices. The two countries sealed their borders to stop job-seeking youths flooding into their countries and even began expelling some migrants from other CEMAC countries. Only Chad, Cameroon, and Gabon have started issuing the CEMAC biometric passports despite a January 2014 deadline. Security concerns are also hindering free movement. Here at Garoubole on Cameroon's eastern border with the CAR, border controls remain with travelers prevented from crossing on both sides. Cameroonian Colonel Etienne Detou says they have arrested rebel combatants from the Central African Republic trying to cross disguised as business persons and refugees.
La situation est relativement calme. Mais il faudrait cependant noter sur le terrain.
He says although there is relative peace on the Cameroon side, it should be noted that there are regular incursions by armed groups and highway robbers from Central African Republic. He says the military and the police should be very vigilant and self-defense groups should participate in safeguarding their territory. Cameroon and Chad are also limiting free movement of people at their common border. Both countries have suffered Boko Haram atrocities as well and want to make it harder for the terrorists to penetrate. CEMAC Commission President Pierre Moussa says the states are taking measures to address security concerns.
En vue d'accompagner la mise en œuvre de cette mesure, elle a décidé d'autoriser la BDRC.
He says for the new visa-free policy to be fully effective, the heads of state have authorized the Development Bank of Central African States to pay $2 million as part of the debt they owe the International Police Organization so that they can help secure the borders of CEMAC. Other ambitious plans for CEMAC regional integration are yet to be executed, including plans to create a regional airline and to build roads linking the regional capitals. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Garoua Boulaye, Cameroon.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Liberia's Supreme Court says it will rule on Monday on a legal complaint against the country's electoral commission. An American woman who works for an online television station in Zimbabwe has been arrested. And South African prosecutors argued today that disgraced Paralympian Oscar Pistorius should serve 9 additional years in prison. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
During the past 25 years, the world has made remarkable progress in saving young children's lives. For the first time ever, annual child deaths have fallen below the 6 million mark. But most of these deaths could have been prevented, according to the latest report from the United Nations. VOA's Carol Pearson has more.
In 1990, 35,000 young children died around the world every day. Last year, 15,000 children and babies died daily, a huge reduction that follows tremendous global effort. While acknowledging the effort it has taken to get to this point, Dr. Flavia Bustreya with the World Health Organization says while the progress is good, it is not enough.
And I need to stress that these deaths can be prevented with the scientific knowledge we have, with the tool interventions we have, with the resources that we have available. These deaths can be prevented.
And that is the tragedy. The latest UN report on child and infant mortality states that every year, millions of children under the age of 5 die, mostly from preventable causes such as malaria, pneumonia, and diarrhea. In almost half of these cases, malnutrition plays a role. Although more children are living to their 5th birthday, Bustreo points out the UN report says 46% of child deaths occur shortly after birth.
Those deaths in the first months of life, they are caused by preterm birth, so a baby that is born too soon. They are caused by low birth weight. They are caused significantly by sepsis, severe infection that is acquired during the delivery, and they are also caused by asphyxia.
While in the womb, the fetus floats in amniotic fluid. This fluid is in the fetus's mouth, ears, and nose. After birth, if a baby cannot breathe and the birth attendant doesn't know how to clear the baby's airways, the baby will die unnecessarily. Children under 5 are also more likely to die from malaria than adults, which is one reason sub-Saharan Africa and parts of Asia have higher child mortality rates than other parts of the world. But there are bright spots in the report. Vaccines for yellow fever and now malaria are saving many children's lives. Countries like Tanzania have tackled air pollution, improved sanitation, and are providing safe drinking water. Despite these gains in reducing child mortality, immense problems remain, and the UN report says if current trends continue, some 60 million children under the age of 5 will die between now and 2030, and half of them will be newborns. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Plague has killed more than 120 people in Madagascar this year. With the memory of the deadly West Africa Ebola outbreak still fresh, local and international health organizations have jumped into action to contain the outbreak. And the U.S. Centers for Disease Control says its global partnership on health security is bringing new strategies to the fight against infectious diseases. VOA's Adam Phillips has more.
The Global Health Security Agenda uses four strategies to fight infectious diseases, and a recent Centers for Disease Control report shows those strategies work. Dr. Hamid Jafri, the principal deputy at the CDC Center for Global Health, says it starts with rigorous surveillance to rapidly identify outbreaks. Next, he says, laboratories must be able to quickly test patients to find which illness is in play. The third crucial element is a trained workforce of disease detectives
who can actually identify outbreaks and patterns of diseases as they start early on. They can do a risk assessment, do data analysis, who can actually analyze surveillance information so that they can then plan for control measures.
Finally, Jafri says a coordinated emergency response and management plan needs to be in place. It should include, among other elements, treatment facilities, health workers, the agricultural and transportation sectors, and an integrated national and international response. The CDC partners with 31 countries in the Global Health Security Agenda, 16 of them in Africa, to implement those four strategies. Jafri points to the current outbreak of pneumonic plague in Madagascar, where the CDC lends crucial support as evidence of progress.
So right now in Madagascar, we have plague experts and scientists who are working with the WHO and the government of Madagascar and other partners to understand the scope of the outbreak, to make sure that the diagnostics and the way the contacts of cases tracked and identified are being implemented, that the border control is in place. And we have epidemiologists who are working closely with public health authorities in the country.
In Liberia, surveillance, disease detective work, and rapid diagnostics paid off. In April, several people who attended a funeral became ill with symptoms that experts feared might be the Ebola virus or Lassa fever. But
they were within days able to diagnose this with support from CDC, that this in fact was a meningococcal disease outbreak. And so they were able to again identify close contacts immediately, provide antibiotic to the close contacts, to about 200 of them, and the outbreak was immediately stopped.
Jafri says the strategy improved outcomes in Uganda. When Marburg virus popped up there last month, the local and international response was immediate. This contrasts sharply with the country's experience during a major cholera outbreak in 2013, when it took 40 days to mobilize resources.
This Marburg virus is the most recent example of how quickly they detected these cases and how quickly they mobilized and quickly analyzed the information that who was the index case, who were the close contacts, infection control measures put in place. Then the CDC country office in Uganda and our experts from Atlanta got involved and supported the national response. So the sea change is incredible.
The team at the CDC Center for Global Health hopes there is growing recognition that it's far less expensive, both in terms of human suffering and finances, to identify outbreaks early before they become international threats. Jafri, however, acknowledges that ramping up capacity throughout Africa will mean painstaking work that must be done, in his words, brick by brick. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
African tourism is picking up, says global home sharing service Airbnb, reaching more than 2 million bookings in the past year. But the hottest attraction is not found in particular sites and scenes, but experiences. The internet-based service is just one of several trying to compete for the African experience tourism market. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
African tourism is changing, say travel industry leaders, moving away from the traditional safaris and package tours and towards the intimate, indefinable, infinitely Instagrammable lure of experiences. Airbnb Global Policy Head Chris Lehane says the new lure is pre-organized experiences. In Nairobi, for example, guests can pay $65 to make a short film with a local director. In South Africa's well-traveled Western Cape, a traditional tourist magnet, about $100 will buy you a guided bike ride or a wine tasting or a jewelry making session.
I think the underlying story of the data is not only have we had incredible growth over the last year, but what it presages or suggests is going to happen. 56% of travelers are millennials. They're looking for real, authentic experiences.
That thirst for the undiscovered, the authentic, has drawn travelers like Sheree Robinson, who at age 30 started web-based travel platform Tastemakers Africa. Her site offers a range of experiences, from $3,000 all-in tours to shorter a la carte experiences that last a few hours and cost, on average, $77.
People don't want cookie cutter. Nobody wants to be crammed into like a tour bus. People are looking for authenticity in their lives in general.
Lehane says he has high hopes.
Last 2 years, Mexico City exploded as a tourist destination. After not being one for years, and by the way, after not being one for some of the same questions that people will raise about places in Africa, but it exploded because of art scene, food scene, history, and you can walk through probably a dozen different cities in Africa that probably would share a similar profile that you could see just taking off.
Lehane and Robinson say their goal is to build travel that is sustainable and that profits locals, in an attempt to steer clear of so-called poverty tourism, which is often seen as not benefiting communities. Lehane says Airbnb is investing $1 million to build community-led tourism projects in lower-income African sites, beginning in Cape Town. Tastemakers Africa hosts are all locally recruited and work on commission. South Africa-based travel blogger and photographer Heather Mason says while you cannot avoid Africa's fundamental economic imbalance, travelers can navigate with respect.
I think every place in every city can be a tourist attraction, and it shouldn't matter whether the people living there are rich or poor. But I do think there's something to be said for the way tour operators approach things. I think you can definitely get that wrong really easily. If you're taking people on tours through townships or what people might call a slum, and you're not involved in the local community, you don't have local guides, and you don't brief the participants in the tour and how to be respectful, then you can run into problems.
Mason's heart, she says, is in Johannesburg, South Africa's gritty, sprawling, diverse economic hub. It is a city often overlooked, wrongly, say Lehane and Robinson, for its reputation for crime. But Mason says, dig a little deeper, and you will find a dizzying array of things to see, do, taste, and hear. A microcosm, she says, of the colorful, loud, challenging experience that is life and the new face of travel in Africa. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhibi in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. and our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.